Warning: this episode contains adult language and cliffhangers. Listener discretion is advised. Crimson Swan Studios presents Lilith's Love by Dan Charette, read by the author, and featuring the voice talents of
Michelle Sully,
Danny Cutler,
CJ Fire-Robind,
Bob Gallagher,
Jack Hosley,
Carl Long,
Jack Mangan.
She went away to play a one-man game, and since that day, it ain't been the same. 'Cause Mary Hill was such a thrill after dark, down in Cherry Hill Park. Billy Joe Royal, Cherry Hill Park. Chapter 11. Chris woke up with one hell of a headache. When he saw Mary Jane standing over him, however, he prayed he was dreaming.
"No, my beloved, you're not dreaming. It's really me, and I'm here for you."
"Here? Where am I?"
he asked and tried to sit up, but the pain shooting through his temples suggested to him that maybe it wasn't wise.
"Now, now, don't try to strain yourself. You'll have to rest a while longer,"
she consoled him. She really was trying her best to be sweet to him, and this added doubt to the list of emotions already swimming through his aching head. Letting confusion rise up from the masses, he asked,
"You didn't answer my question. Where am I?"
"You're laying on a very comfortable bed,"
she said as she slipped under the covers to join him.
"With a very beautiful woman who misses you more than you know."
"And this headache?"
She looked deep into his eyes and asked,
"What headache? You are in no pain."
Chris thought for a moment and realized that he really was in no pain. Not impressed with her parlor tricks, he asked,
"What are you doing here?"
She kissed him and started gently rolling her fingers over his chest and said,
"I kind of figured that was obvious,"
and kissed him again. Those lips, he missed them so much. Her touch once was such a wonderful sensation. Now those lips were cold to him. He looked at her sternly and said,
"That's not what I meant, and you know it."
"You mean in town?"
"Yes."
"Why, I came here to find you, silly. I felt bad about the way we broke up, so I came here to surprise you."
He wanted desperately to believe her. She'd said it so sincerely, he almost did. Almost.
"Why did we break up? No. Why did you break up with me?"
She gave a pout and said,
"I met someone else. He promised me things. Beautiful things. Powerful things. Exciting things. I couldn't refuse him, but I never loved him. I only loved you. That never changed. He never loved me. I ran away from him, looking for you. When I found you, he found me. He told me you'd found somebody new. I didn't believe him till I followed you."
"But that... are you... I mean... this guy you met, did he make you a..."
He just couldn't bring himself to say it.
"A vampire? Yes. I'm sorry about that night. I overreacted."
"Overreacted? Damn, Janie. I'd hate to see you during your time of the month."
"Well, I don't exactly menstruate anymore. I..."
Shuddering from the image she started to describe, he stopped her.
"I don't really want to know about that right now. What I want to know is, where am I, and how did I get here?"
Her face changed from the sweet, innocent face of his former lover to a cold, calculating one.
"That's none of your concern right now. You should be thinking more about what you're going to do while you're here."
He winced when he realized she wasn't going to be helpful until he started playing the game her way.
"I'm sorry. You're right. We're here together. You've made a tremendous sacrifice coming here, bringing me here."
The cold mask melted away, revealing his beautiful Janie again. Maybe she was telling the truth. Maybe she just wanted one last fling to remind her of what she threw away. In either case, he swallowed his pride, put his fears aside, and kissed her. With that kiss, a flood of thoughts passed through his mind. He came across an image of Anna and tried to focus on it. He thought of how much he missed Anna. He wondered why he wasn't with her now, kissing her now. Then he realized Mary Jane might see her image in his thoughts, so he quickly tried to blank his mind. He let his mind drift, even to the point where he was no longer aware of his surroundings. Eventually, everything went dark.
Something must be up,
Don told Anna as he searched for Chris's appointment book. The small black day planner showed itself, and Don exclaimed,
Ah, here it is.
He began flipping through the pages and found his proof.
See, there's no meeting or anything scheduled for tonight after 6:30. Something else must have happened.
Staring at the book, his vision slowly got fuzzy. He attempted to adjust his glasses to no avail. Eventually, he took his glasses off to wipe them with his t-shirt. He started wiping one lens when he noticed, or actually realized, that he could see everything clearly. He stopped wiping and turned to Anna and looked at her. Curious, Anna asked,
What is it, Don?
I can see you, clearly, better than I could with my glasses on.
What? You mean you don't need your glasses?
Amazing, huh? Let me see that book again.
He put his glasses aside as he took the book into his hands. He looked at it up close, then far away. Then he asked Anna to hold it up, and he walked backwards.
This is incredible. I can still read it. I can focus into even the finest details.
Then he looked up and he saw the fibers in Anna's dress, the lines that worry had put on her face. He observed aloud,
You're not wearing any makeup.
She was so amazed that he could see that well that she blushed and said,
It's so bad for your skin. So unnatural.
You're a very beautiful girl. Your outer beauty surpassed only by your beauty within. Chris is a very lucky guy.
She almost turned beet red by the compliments.
I'd like to think I'm the lucky one to have found Chris. Besides, I don't think Lilith did all that bad in finding you. I think I like you without your glasses.
Now Don blushed a bit. He picked up his glasses and snapped them in two with ease. He impressed Anna and himself.
It seems that my vision isn't the only thing that's improved thanks to Lilith. Speaking of which, we should find her.
I saved you the trouble, love,
Lilith said from behind him. He turned around and smiled when he saw her.
Well, I guess I haven't developed eyes in the back of my head yet. What do you think?
It started already? I think you look very handsome without the glasses,
she said, then kissed him. Just from her kiss, Don could tell that there was something wrong.
What's troubling you, Lily?
I found Mary Jane tonight. She was attacking Michael. I stopped her, but she got away. Then I discovered the truth on some matters. But I'll tell you about them later. Is there something happening here?
Well, Chris is gone, and that schedule of his doesn't say where to.
Oh, shit. Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I don't know. You're the one that reads minds. You tell us.
Very funny. Yeah, I bet Mary Jane's got Chris.
Well, we need to find them.
Easier said than done. We'll need some help.
That's covered. I brought some folks willing to help us search, but they're at my place. I couldn't invite them into your house.
Your friends from the bar?
Yep. Come on over and meet them. Don't tell them about what's happening to you. I trust them, but I don't want to take any risks with you.
She finished by kissing him. As they walked out of Chris's room, Don tossed his broken glasses into the wastebasket and turned out the light. Locking the front door behind them, Don followed the ladies next door to meet even more vampires.
This should be interesting,
he thought to himself. Malcolm, Michael, and Jake were discussing Mary Jane and the different places she and her master might hide away. As Anna approached the front door, Jake smelled the blood flowing through her and Dawn. In a heartbeat, Jake had his revolver out and aimed at the door. When Anna walked in, Michael raced over to steady Jake's hand. Anna was more than a little shocked when she saw the gun pointed her way. Michael told Jake,
"That's Anna, Lilith's retainer. Chill out."
Jake loosened up and apologized as he put the pistol back in his jacket. Lilith rushed in and asked Michael,
"What's he doing carrying a piece? Shit, he could have shot Anna or Dawn."
"Jake's still a young vamp. He clings to his mortal defenses still."
Dawn then walked in, semi-cautiously.
"And this must be Donovan. It's good to finally meet you."
Dawn shook the vampire's hand and said,
"Same here, though I wish it were under better circumstances."
"Agreed,"
said a voice from the living room. Jake and Michael stepped aside as Malcolm walked forward and introduced himself.
"I am Malcolm, and as you said, the circumstances could be better. Good to meet you, Donovan."
He shook Dawn's hand, then turned to Anna, kissed her hand, and said,
"And good to make your acquaintance, Anna."
"Now that formalities are settled, let's discuss search party plans."
"Very well, then. Lilith, any suggestions?"
"Of course I don't know the city very well, but Dawn does, so he should go with me to guide me. What are you three familiar with?"
"Well, I know the west side of the valley pretty well, and can think of a few places to look. Jake knows downtown like the back of his hand. Perhaps you should go with him. And Malcolm, well, he's familiar with it all."
"But I can narrow my search to the east side."
Anna, feeling slightly left out, asked,
"What about me? Should I stay here in case Chris shows up?"
"No, I don't want you left alone. You'll come with us. In fact, we'll use your van and you can drive."
"Okay, one more thing. Should we be taking some protection? Something with stopping power? I doubt Jake's pistol will stop the master, if we should encounter him."
"What do you suggest?"
"Some wooden stakes, crosses, holy water?"
"Crosses and holy water will do you no good against the master. They would only make him laugh. They might slow Mary Jane down, but a good stake square in the chest would probably do her as well. I think you should just take a couple of stakes if you really must have something."
"Okay, I'll be right back. Dawn, could you help me?"
"Sure,"
Dawn responded, and followed her down to her basement temple. He marveled at the energy in the temple. Memories of his past life came back to him. Even the decorations of the temple were familiar. He wondered if Lilith had a hand in setting it up for her. Anna opened up a small chest in the corner by the cabinet. Inside was a denim backpack, crosses, small bottles of blessed water, and some wooden stakes. She asked Dawn to hold the backpack open as she just started grabbing everything she could that she thought would fit. All that could fit were 4 stakes, 2 bottles of blessed water, and 1 large crucifix. She then put the pack on herself, grabbed a stake, and handed it to Dawn.
"These in the pack will be our arsenal, but you should take one just in case."
Dawn understood and clenched it firmly in his hand. Then Anna grabbed another bottle of water and a small towel from the cabinet.
"Are you wearing your Ankh?"
He pulled it out from under his shirt and said,
"Always. Why?"
"Let me see it quickly."
He set the stake aside, then unclasped the chain that the Ankh was on. He handed her the chain and Ankh. She uncorked the bottle, placed the Ankh inside the bottle, letting the chain hang outside, and then recorked the bottle. She walked over to the table in the center of the room, but not directly to it. Instead, she walked around the table in a wide, clockwise circle, erecting the temple. She knelt in front of the table, set the bottle down, and mumbled what Dawn assumed to be an incantation of some kind. She then stood up, walked around the table again counterclockwise, clearing the temple, then back to where Dawn was standing. She took the Ankh out of the bottle by the chain and blotted any excess water off the Ankh. She then handed it back to him and put the bottle back in the cabinet. As Dawn put the chain back on around his neck, Anna told him,
"I have blessed your Ankh, hoping it will protect you from any vampires. You should wear it out. If any of our friends out there, even Lilith, object to it, leave it out over the shirt in plain view. They will understand. At least Lilith will."
"What about me? I'm not a vampire yet, but I know I'm changing."
He made a gesture toward his face, pointing out his improved eyesight, and asked,
"Will it harm me?"
"I don't think so. The blessing should protect its wearer, not harm him.
Understood. Thanks.
No problem. Now, let's get back up there and find Chris.
She said with confidence. Don nodded, grabbed the stake he had laid aside, and walked up the stairs. Anna turned out the lights, closed the door, and followed him up. Jake was the first one to notice Don's ankh and stake and started to protest, but Lilith stopped him before he said a word.
All right, then. Let's hit the road,
Don said, eager to find his friend. They all walked outside, Anna locking the door behind them.
We'll let you know if we find anything.
Then he hovered off to the west. Malcolm added,
Don't worry, we'll find him.
Then he took flight towards the east side. Anna opened the van's side door, letting Don and Lilith get in the back. Jake took the passenger seat as Anna closed the side door, removed her backpack, and walked to the driver's seat. As she sat down and buckled up, Jake suggested,
Okay, first, let's just head south. We'll find a few old shops and warehouses. There are a couple that I know of that are prime vamp territory. If nothing else, we may be able to ask some of the locals.
A vampire as powerful as this master would probably have made allies out of them down there, if we find any, wouldn't you think?
Maybe, but it never hurts to ask. There are some that I know I can trust.
Okay then, Anna, let's get moving.
Okay, mon ami.
Anna answered as she started the van and headed for downtown. Out of the corner of her eye, Lilith noticed a slight glow in the amethyst on Don's ankh. At first, she dismissed it as light playing on it, but when it became obvious that the purple glare was actually emanating from it, she pulled close to him and said,
Don, look at your ankh. Tell me you see what I'm seeing.
He looked closely at his familiar ankh and was surprised to find that the normally dark purple stone was glowing a soft light that was growing in magnitude. It remained at a certain level, and then it slowly receded. Jake suggested that Anna make a left turn, and Lilith and Don grabbed onto their seats as the van turned wide, taking their attention away from the amethyst. As Anna picked up speed down a new street, they focused their attention back onto the gem. It began to glow again, and then faded slightly.
Anna, stop the van!
Anna pulled off to the right side of the road and stopped. She and Jake undid their seatbelts and came to the back of the van. As she walked up to the seat where Lilith and Don were at, she asked,
Why did you want me to stop?
Finding the reason glowing in front of her, she remained silent.
Now what is that thing doing?
Implying that before it was just a nuisance as it radiated protection against him.
See? It's staying constant now, Don said, as if that answered their questions.
Lilith understood, so she explained.
The amethyst has been glowing for some reason, fading in and out. It might be acting like a compass.
More like a Geiger counter.
Jake, completely confused, asked a very good question.
But how? It's just a rock.
Lately, I've been inclined to believe that anything's possible. Maybe we should follow the theory out, see where it might be leading us.
Anna smiled to herself. She assumed that the glowing was a side effect of her spell. She sincerely hoped that Don was right, because she certainly didn't expect this. She decided that he should help navigate, then.
Okay, then get up front with me.
No, the streetlights are too bright. They'll flood the glow. He should stay back here. We'll shout directions as best as possible.
Jake, who didn't know what to make of the idea, decided to let them play their hand.
Okay, then. I'll go back to shotgun. Let's go, Anna.
Once back up front and buckled in, Anna started the van up and turned off the radio. She called out,
Where to first?
It started to fade out before you stopped, so try to make a U-turn and go back a bit.
Don and Lilith braced themselves again for Anna's turn. This time, however, they kept a closer watch on the amethyst. Anna followed their directions and, though they came close a few times to getting lost, eventually they stopped in front of an old abandoned warehouse. The glow of the amethyst was now enough to cast purple shadows in the back of the van.
This is definitely the place.
They all filed out of the van through the side door. Don tightened his grip on his stake and Anna secured her backpack as she closed the van door. As the four approached the ruins that were once a successful business, the street lamp above went out.
Why'd that light go out?
The lights in these neighborhoods are timed. They supposedly help conserve energy. If you ask me, it's dangerous. Then again, this area is dangerous in broad daylight. Go fig.
Don didn't need the lamp, however. His vision had improved now so dramatically that his eyes had adjusted quickly to the soft purple light his Ankh was casting. Don took Anna's hand to lead her safely, and he whispered to her,
I can see perfectly in this dim light. This is incredible.
He tried not to let his excitement attract Jake's attention. Instead, he held his Ankh out like a guiding light and squinted to feign normal vision. They eventually found a door that didn't have boards or bars over it, just a simple padlock. Jake pulled out his revolver and blew the lock clean off. Don was the only one who recognized the irony that, if the master were here, he failed to use the right brand of padlock. Don was also the only one who found it counterproductive to stealth to be shooting a revolver at a padlock. With Lilith in front and Jake bringing up the rear, they entered the old building, closing the door behind them. After weaving through a few dingy halls, they came to a clearing where some candles were providing light.
What are these candles doing here?
The cocking sound of the revolver prompted him to say,
I'm sorry I asked.
Don turned around to find Jake pointing the revolver at his chest. You've been listening to episode 12 of Lilith's Love, written and performed by Dan Charette, featuring the music of The Narrow Way, used with permission. Starring Michelle Selly as Lilith Thompson, Danny Cutler as Anna Foster, C.J. Fireovind as Mary Jane Hill, Bob Gallagher as Malcolm, Jack Hosley as Jake, Carl Long as Christian Armstrong, and Jack Mangan as Michael Barrett. Sound effects courtesy of the Free Sound Project, which can be found at www.freesound.org. This audio recording is copyright 2009 and 2010 by Dan Charette and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.5 license. You are encouraged to share this audio file. Just don't sell it, don't change it, and let folks know where they can hear more. The novel, Lilith's Love, is copyright 1994 by Dan Charette and can be found at Amazon.com or ordered at fine bookstores everywhere. This is a work of fiction. All names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's peculiar imagination or are used fictitiously. Any resemblance to any actual persons, living, dead, or undead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental. To find out more about the novel, please visit www.liliths-love.com or the author's homepage at www.danscharette.com. That's DanSharette.com.